Local voices, local history on West Limerick 102 FM. The late Mannix Joyce, recorded at Knockfearna Rambling House.
Now, it is, of course, the eve of Lent, and a certain amount of feasting went on Shrove Tuesday. Now, Lent in former times was a far stricter thing than, in fact, there's no Lent there now, really. You have just two fast days, Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, where when I was growing up, you had 40 days of Lent. And earlier on, go back a couple of hundred years ago, the thing was much more strict, because not alone were people forbidden to eat meat on any day of Lent, but they were also forbidden to use milk or any milk product, butter or cheese or anything like curds and whey or anything like that that people use. So it must have meant a great limitation to the food that people were able to use during Lent. I don't know how strictly the thing was observed, but the Irish names of the week carry a reminder of strict times, strict fast. You have Cadine, Dairdine, Ina. Ina means a fast day, it's Friday. But you have Cade, Ian, the first fast day. Wednesday was a fast day as well. And Dairdine was Ian, the day between the two fast days. So you have in the Irish name of the week a reminder of the time when there were two fast days or 2 days of abstinence in the week. But when people were about to enter into that season of fasting and abstinence, they had a feast, not so much just to have the feast, but to use up what butter and meat and so on they'd have in the house, and that gave rise to the custom of making pancakes on Shrove Tuesday night. The real purpose was to use up any excess food that they couldn't eat or drink during the 40 days of Lent. Now, there was a custom that Kevin Danaher refers to as being current in Limerick and Kerry and a couple of other Munster counties. And it was a custom of taking a portion of the meat that would be cooked on Shrove Tuesday and attaching it to the thatch and leaving it there until Easter Sunday and taking it down. And I heard from my mother, who had it from her mother, who was born in 1838, that she saw that custom, the piece of meat being taken and being attached to the roof or the thatch roof of the house with a pointed stick. And she had a name for the little piece of meat. It was called the birreen. And I'm sure it came from what beer, the pointed stick. And so that was a custom. My grandmother was from the parish of Drummond at Lackey, so that was observed in that parish, and I'm sure in the neighbouring parishes on Shrove Tuesday. The placing of that small piece of meat on the thatch on Shrove Tuesday night and taking it down on Easter Sunday, and it was supposed to bring a blessing on the house to do that. Now, there is a saying in Irish, Enon Caestus, Moran Caesar, Banyad Dole, Dona Coscus, Moran Aura, Vegan Fjord. That's Enon Caestus, Good Friday, is Moran Aura, Banyad Dole. It's a great shame to drink milk, Dona Coscus, Moran Aura, Vegan Fjord. And on Easter Sunday, it's a great shame to be without meat. People had meat only very rarely at that time. Another thing, of course, associated with Shrove Tuesday and with the whole period of Shrove were the marriages. And it was a period during which numerous marriages took place, but most of them took place on Shrove Tuesday. And I remember about 20 years ago talking to a man. He was born in Ireland, but he had been in America for years and years and years. And he was telling me that his father was married on Shrove Tuesday. And it was, in our locality, it was a pretty famous Shrove Tuesday. It was Shrove Tuesday, the 5th of March, 1867. This man's name was O'Shea. And Shrove Tuesday, 1867, Shrove Tuesday night, was the night that the Fenians marched to Kilmallock to attack the police barracks in Kilmallock. You probably know the line of the song. It was Downing in Kilmallock. It was the hottest fight of all. It was the most prolonged and the best organised fight of the whole Fenian rising in Kilmallock. But that man's father was married on Shrove Tuesday night in 1867. He told me that my grandfather stood with him. Another connection with it. But an interesting thing was, the following day, Ash Wednesday, a lot of the men of the locality who were believed to have taken part in the rising in Kilmallock, the Fenians, were arrested. But a number of the local men were able to prove that they were at the wedding on that Shrove Tuesday night, and so didn't participate in the rising in Kilmallock. So that's just a memory of Shrove Tuesday night, 1867. So I think that's enough anyway about Shrove Tuesday and the other.
From St Kieran's Heritage Society.
Bishop Robert Lacy. The oldest headstone in Ardy graveyard marks the grave of a former Bishop of Limerick, the Right Reverend Robert D. Lacy. Bishop Lacy was made a bishop by Pope Clement in 1737 and died on August the 4th, 1759. Bishop Lacy is buried in the family vault, which is inside the old church ruins. The Bishop's Road. This is the old road from Rean's Pike through Cooley Brown to Skehanna that Bishop Lacy was brought through from Limerick for burial in Ardy. It was later used for the funeral procession of William Smith O'Brien to Rathronan. Stephen's Bridge. The bridge is on the Glenville Road near Rathronan Church, and it was here that Eliza Giles, a 50-year-old woman from North Kerry, her body was found underneath after being murdered by John Clenane in the 1850s. He was a tramp labourer from North Kerry who settled in Ardy. He was tried for the murder in Limerick, found guilty and hanged. A ballad was written about the incident, possibly by John Purcell, the bard who also wrote about the Glenchild's evictions. The Glenside Band. The Glenside Cayley Band was formed in the 1950s and played in all the local halls around West Limerick. Mick and Madge Mullins from Glenville and their family and numerous others gave great enjoyment for over 50 years. Dunganville Ringfort. A double banked ringfort near Dunganville Bridge. It is located on the edge of a gorge cut by the River Dar, 1 mile from Ardy village. It is a wet fosse and south rains and was in an excellent state of preservation. It is one of the largest forts in Ireland and probably dates from the early Christian period, circa 700 AD. T.J. Westrop, the famous antiquarian, summarised that Dunganville, because of its size and situation, may have been the famous Timpair Lucre mentioned in the sagas of Finn and the Fianna. The Amherst Brothers. Father Bob Amrus was born in Dungalville. He took part with his brother Stephen in the attack on Ardee Barracks on March the 5th, 1867. Stephen was wounded and they both went on the run. Stephen made his way to America and Bob joined the priesthood. He served as curate with Father KCPP in Abbeyfield. He took a prominent role in the struggle against the landlords when curate of Ardee Collacherry and helped during the plan of campaign at Glencharald. He played a prominent role of the birth of Ardee Creamery. He died as parish priest of Glenroe in East Limerick on the 8th of April 1926 and is buried in the churchyard of Glenroe. Ballylinhing Hill Fort. It may date from the late Bronze Age and it is characterised by the presence of two widely spaced ramparts. This is an extremely large hill fort in the townland of Ballylin, the outer wall of which encloses over 50 acres of ground. This fort is 797 feet above sea level and is believed to be the largest of 50 or so such monuments in Ireland. Despite being called forts, there is now some doubt as to whether they served a ritual purpose rather than a military one. William C. Upton. He was born in 1847 and he was a skilled carpenter and cabinet maker. He was a member of the Fenians and took part in the attack on Ardee Barracks on March 5, 1867. He escaped to America. He was the author of Uncle Pat's Cabin and he is buried in New York.
Birds of Ardee. St Patrick founded a church on the top of Knockpatrick Hill near Shanagolden. He stayed in the area for a while after that before he moved on to Ardpatrick. On that journey he passed through the place where the village of Ardee is now. The saint and his men found scant welcome there. In fact, many of the locals threw stones at them, beat them with sticks and tried to drive them away. St Patrick was so angry that he called out a curse upon them. He said there would be a corpse among them every Monday morning. The good people of the area were horrified when they heard Patrick's words and they begged him to modify his curse. Not everyone here is cruel. There are good people amongst us and we do not deserve your wrath. We heard your curse that each Monday there will be a death there. Can you not change the terms of it and let it fall on some other creature rather than the people? Patrick listened and he saw the sense of their pleading, so he agreed, let it be so, I will spare the people of Ardee. They say that ever since then, every Monday, a dead bird has been found in Ardee. St. Patrick's Shoes. One day St. Patrick was walking through Brewery. It was on a Monday morning. He'd been travelling on foot for many days and his shoes were the worse for wear and big bloody blisters were coming up on his poor feet. As he was passing the shoemaker's house, he stopped in to ask if they could do something for him to fix up his old brogues and extend the life of them for him. The shoemaker told him to be on his way. We're too busy here just now to be fixing up shoes for an old tramp like you. Besides, we've hardly any leather in the house. We can do nothing for you today. St. Patrick wondered how they could be so busy if they'd no leather to work with. The saint went on his way, limping on his blistered feet, and left the town of Brewery. But he left a curse of his own for the town of Brewery. From that day on, every Monday, a starling would fall to the ground from the walls of the castle to remind the people of Brewery of their lack of kindness. Once a tinker living around Kilcolman who was known in the area for doing a good job of mending pots and pans. Despite his reputation for good work, he was still poor and was always looking for bits of work. One day he had to go to Duncaha to mend some broken pipes. On his way there, he had to walk through a large dark wood. He got straight to work and there was nothing but praise for the job he did. When he was finished, they paid him 3 shillings. As he was going home, he came to a crossroads. A poor man asked if he could spare him any money. The tinker, feeling well off for a change, gave him a shilling and went on his way. "Bless you, sir," the beggar called. As the tinker reached the edge of the dark wood, he met another poor man, this one even more ragged and thin than the last. Could he spare any money? The tinker gave another shilling and walked on into the wood. "Bless you, sir," the beggar called behind him. On the path through the dark wood, he met a third poor man who asked for his help. The tinker did not know what to do this time. He only had one shilling left. He was poor enough himself, and without that shilling, how would he eat tonight? He offered the beggar sixpence. The beggar refused it. "If that's all you can give me, you'd best keep it. But if you have a shilling, I'd take that, and thank you." The tinker gave his last shilling to the poor man and walked on. What could he do now he'd given away all he had? "May the devil take me if I pass through this wood again." Suddenly, the wood filled with light. He looked around and saw a bright angel with a light around his head standing before him. "'Twas myself you met three times on your path in the guise of a beggar. And as you gave me what you had so willingly, I'll now give you three wishes." The tinker was delighted. Without stopping to think, he straightaway made his wishes. "I wish that the village boys would never again touch my tool bag. I wish that anyone who tries to pick an apple from the tree outside my home becomes stuck to it. And I wish that my flour bin is full of flour when I get home." The angel said, "As you wish, so shall it be," and they parted. When he reached home, the tinker looked in his flour bin and saw that it was full. He was delighted to find his wish fulfilled, and he told his wife about his encounter with the angel. A few weeks later, he was called back to the same house in Duncaha. He set off in a great mood, thinking he'd have the same adventure as before. He did the job, got paid, but on his journey home again, things did not work out quite so well for him. Passing through the wood, he met the devil, who said, "You must come with me. The last time you were here, you said, 'May the devil take me if I ever pass through this wood again.' Don't you remember?" The tinker now regretted his hasty curse, but what could he do? He went with the devil. When they were near the tinker's house, he turned to the devil and said, "Can you change yourself into another shape?" "I can, of course," said the devil. "What would you like me to change into?" "How about an iron bar?" said the tinker, beginning to hatch a plan. The devil asked, "Why do you want me to change my shape?" "It's a bit embarrassing," said the tinker. "This is the town where I live and everyone knows me. If people see us together, they'll laugh at me." The devil changed himself into an iron bar and the tinker put it into his tool bag. He ran to the blacksmith's forge, got the iron bar ground up and was free again. A few weeks later, the tinker was passing through the wood and met the devil again. "You fooled me last time, but now you're coming with me." And the tinker had no choice but to go with him. When they got near his house, the tinker said, "Would you look at those juicy red apples on the tree beside the house? Would you ever pick one for me?" The devil went into the garden and reached up for an apple, and he stuck to the apple tree. "Let me go, let me go," he demanded. "I will not let you go until you set me free," said the tinker, and the devil reluctantly agreed. A few weeks later, the tinker was called to Duncaha again. As he was passing through the wood, he met the devil again. "You fooled me before, but this time you have to come with me." The tinker asked if he could have time to say a few words of prayer. When the devil agreed, the tinker used that moment to make his escape. He never met the devil on his path through the woods again. Jenny MacDonald.
This is quite a long one, as I say. This is this was put in a little booklet that was printed here many moments ago, I should think, well in the 70s. And it resonates with me purely because I do this walk every day, and it's one particular place I love, and I can almost see the person writing it because I do it myself. So it's thanks to Peg Brosnahan from Glen Quinn, who supplied this person with the poem, and it was written by her brother in the late, he was from New York, but he actually came from Turnfeller, and his name was Dan Sheehan, and he's written a couple, but this particular one is quite nice. It's and everybody, which is a way of introducing it, everybody can relate, I think, to Buckley's Cross. It's the centre cross point between Newcastle West and Abbeyfield.
Sure.
And anybody going through from Dublin, if you like, right through to the West Coast would go through
Buckley's Cross.
Cross. And so it's, you know, it has a resonance to so many people. But from Buckley's Cross, let's gaze across West Limerick's fields so green, and scan the nearest mountain with their jutting cliffs serene. How regally they tower aloft, in splendour, minus pride, rocked, ribbed are they, stout of heart, they in themselves confide. In grim and stoic countenance, unmoved by time or tide, except for the earthquake's pending shock, in peace they'll e'er abide. So rugged and so steep, and decorated here and there with goats and mountain sheep. To the south of Commons Hill and famed Old Loch Agee, no place on earth could look so sweet at the closing of the day. For old King Cole seems to bow his head before he fades away in the waters of this little lake where swans and wild geese play. And Glenquin Castle stands in view, and in history takes its place where Norman hordes would raid our shores, they built this army base. Today, it stands both straight and tall, as it did when in its prime, and frowns upon the passerby like a sentinel of time. Close at hand lies the village of Strand, at the foot of a mighty gorge. I can almost hear the anvil ring inside the blacksmith's forge, and hear the smith sing an old refrain as he hammers out the shoe, and his helpers duck the flying sparks, but misses one or two. And back there lies Glenmore, Farran, and Killicalleen, overlooking the Allerhorn, that beautiful winding stream, and Temple Glantin, the Pound, and the Old Gateen. I see them all as I do recall my childhood days again, and though some years have passed away, they still appear the same. And Sugar Hill is towering high, with its heather coat of brown. If you want a glimpse of paradise, look there when the sun goes down. Oh, what a sight that meets the eyes as daylight fades away and the sun is slowly sinking behind old sweet Atay. With the lordly Shannon stealing softly by heading to the west, where the mighty Atlantic Ocean will hug it to its breast. If perchance we chance to glimpse the magic of this scene, we see them at their meeting place in waves of silvery green. North-east lies Shanagolden, the old mill, and Newcastle West, with Ruska Hill in the background as she guards the golden west, Gillicateen at her feet, Glonard and Garduff, with their little white-washed homes, hay barns and reeks of turf. And old Rathcully Hill, so stately stands at her feet that fairy glen, that's famed in song and story as the home of the little men. When night is high and the dew is falling and the folks all gone to bed, 'tis there you'll hear sweet music by the little men in red. Now back again the Buckley's Cross, the fairest place of all. We will see Willio's Grove and its mountain ash and nine trees straight and tall. And how you'd cope, I'd like to stroll there again, and I hope to make it soon, down the castle road and towards Mean T. Hohen on a Sunday afternoon. I have travelled many a mile in the good old USA, but no place on earth could equal that spot so far away. Not even beautiful New York, so majestically by the sea, could fill a longing in my heart for what's home sweet home to me.
Local voices, local history on West Limerick 102 FM.